Hello and welcome to our latest edition of the ALS Association podcast. My name is Tony Heil, the Communications and Public Policy Director here at the ALS Association Greater Philadelphia Chapter. If you've been paying attention to our past podcasts, which you can get on iTunes or on our website, you've heard from people with ALS, you've heard from walk team leaders, you've heard from advocates, and even the head of the ALS Association, Barb Newhouse. Today, we're very thrilled to have one of our chief champions in advocacy, State Representative Brian Cutler, who's going to be talking about his background and about advocacy in general and how more people can keep being involved, sharing their story, and making a difference in the fight against ALS. As always, you can continue being involved. Go to our website at www.alsphiladelphia.org. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and all that stuff at ALS Philadelphia. And make sure to continue sharing your stories because, as you'll hear from today's podcast, it really makes a difference because each one of your personal stories of ALS makes a big impact on others. So, as I said, our guest today is State Representative Brian Cutler, though I'm going to just shorten that to Brian for most of this. And thank you, Brian, for being part of our podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me down.
So people might know you because we've talked about our connection many times through our emails and social media, but a lot of people probably are hearing about your story for the first time through this. So tell us why ALS is important to you in Harrisburg and your life.
Well, when I was 15, my mom was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease, and I had a younger sister at the time who was 13, and that would have been February of 1991. And as we went through her treatments and her follow-up and her diagnosis, she obviously was impacted at a very very quick pace in terms of the disease. From the time that she had her onset of symptoms, which was numbness in her two fingers in her right hand, she was probably using a walker within about 6 to 9 months in a wheelchair shortly thereafter. That stage of her disease progressed very rapidly. Within a year, the following year, my dad was also diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease. And at first, everybody thought that could potentially be a good sign because the odds of both of them being diagnosed with ALS was extremely low, so they thought perhaps they had misdiagnosed one or both of them. So they began the battery of tests all over again, and unfortunately, once that concluded, they came back and did in fact say that they both had Lou Gehrig's disease. My father had more of a bulbar type, and he could walk even up until the day he passed away, and his accelerated very quickly, and from onset to him passing away was the traditional timeline at that time of about a year and a half to 2 years. He passed away April of 93, which was my senior year in high school, and my mom had essentially plateaued at that point. So I decided to stay close to home, went to a technical school, and my sister and I, we helped in the house and around the house, and we had very fortunate that we had a lot of support from the community. We had a lot of, you know, local church groups, the Farm Women Association, the Lions Clubs. Everybody would come and do things. They'd give us meals. They'd help us cut firewood because we heated our home with wood. And one of the things that I was always most impressed with was, despite some of the difficulties associated with the disease and having to provide care 24/7, my sister and I really essentially had about as normal of a life as we could have. You know, she participated in track. I held a part-time job on the neighboring dairy farm, and we both were able to stay very involved with our church and our community. And as we progressed, my mom was able to see us get married, and she actually, at that time, she lived for an extremely long time because she did not pass away until September of 99. And at that point, I had been working for some time as an x-ray technologist at the hospital, had started going back for my bachelor's degree, which I ultimately finished, and then eventually I ended up going to law school. And in my third year of law school, I decided to run for office, which is how I ended up in the state house. I felt like being able to serve in the state house would be an appropriate way to thank our community. And because I really wouldn't have gotten as far as I did in life in terms of my educational trajectory or anything really along those lines in terms of any of the successes I had were only because of the support that I had from the local community and from the ALS Association in general.
Well, you grew up really fast with all that stuff happening. You hear from other people with ALS, their kids having to grow up and be an adult before they're ready to be an adult. I mean, granted, you were 15 and growing up, but that's when you're 15, you're not really an adult yet.
Right. Yeah. Things happen pretty quick. I mean, that was one of the things my sister and I both ended up becoming managers at each of the respective hospitals that we worked at. And we were some of the younger folks, but you know, at that point we'd had years of hiring and firing and training staff. Mm. So it was from terms of a life experience, it actually benefited us professionally as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. I know from talking to a number of other people with ALS that they've had caregivers in their home and they've hired someone because they had a good fit, or they fired someone because it wasn't a good fit, or you know, their hours didn't work well or whatever. You forget that you're almost an employer when you're a ALS family.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a lot of folks come through the door in a good way. For example, you know, since both of my parents were ill, we were able to really overlap some of their care to provide longer periods of service. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we intersperse volunteers from church and things as well. So we were very fortunate in that regard.
Yeah, it's always great to know that the community is able to help. And I guess that's something that people should know, too, is that there's always help out there. You just have to ask, and whether it's the ALS Association, and we always want to be able to be the best helpers possible, but there's always groups that they just need to know that you need the help.
Right.
And people are generally good, I think, from my experience here.
Yes.
So obviously there's the challenges of having two parents with ALS, but were there other challenges that came about because of that, because they're diseases were different, so you're like, oh well, that's not how it was with dad, or that's not how it was with mom, and different expectations along the way.
Yeah, for example, when my dad was first getting sick, since he had more of a bulbar type of ALS, he really struggled to speak, mm-hmm. and he ultimately had a lot of swallowing and breathing problems as well. But initially, a lot of the friends that he worked with just assumed that he was drinking in order to cope with the stress related to mom being sick. And when it turned out, he in fact was not doing that, but was actually sick himself. So there was a wide spectrum of things in terms of how their diseases progressed. So unfortunately, what would work for one typically would not work for the other in terms of care or setting up things in order to get things together. So that certainly presented some different challenges. You know, my mom, with as quickly as she went to a wheelchair, we always anticipated that dad would as well, but he never did.
Mm. Yeah, that sounds really frustrating, because I can only imagine, like, my grandfather had ALS, and going to him and saying, well, I know this is what you need, and it's not what you need, and not being able to communicate it well, and not knowing what you don't know, and also the amount of information back then was a lot different than it is now.
Yeah, there's certainly been great advances in terms of both treatment as well as access to care, you know, the clinics that coordinate and deliver the care, you know, in large part because of the work that you all have done. And, you know, back then it was not quite as well known. Obviously everybody knew Lou Gehrig, but, you know, that's probably the one thing that I think that really was a good byproduct of the Ice Bucket Challenge last year, is it really raised community awareness in terms of, one, what the disease is, but also, two, what support services are available out there. Because mm-hmm. a lot of times, I mean, we really, you know, it was all from scratch at first with mom. But then obviously when dad got sick there, you know, we already knew who to call and things. But there was a lot of just research going on, you know, and, you know, the internet wasn't nearly as big as it is today. So
you had actually read books.
Yes. Yeah, there was a lot of things. Now, granted, my mom had a healthcare background as well. So, you know, we all knew, you know, we probably knew more than the average family, but it was, you know, it was still a little difficult to just get access to information, where to go, and the clinical piece was not quite as robust as it is now, thanks to a lot of the research that's been done.
Yeah, a lot of the research people don't realize is not just about new genes or about new drug treatments, but about how to do basic clinical care, how to do that better, how to provide one-on-one. And that's important research to get done to hope so that now, 20 years after that fact, people can get better care at a clinic setting.
Right.
So how, when you went around then, and people in the community were very helpful, but they didn't know much about the ALS, I imagine.
No, and our community was great. I mean, they, you know, from the time that mom got sick, they set up fundraisers to help buy a wheelchair van and things. But so there was a lot of education that went on then as well. Unfortunately, since then, we've had several other people have the disease in the community. So there's certainly an increased awareness in our local community. Mm-hmm. And folks are very quick to kind of make the connection back to me since I'm still in the area. And, you know, the nice thing is obviously I know you all and what you do. So it's easy to kind of help make some of those connections for some of the local families. So they don't have to do the level of research that we did early on.
Yeah, that's a rewarding thing for me being here is instead of just me contacting legislators is when they contact us sometimes and say, oh, there's someone here that needs help. Do you know where they can get it? Being able to provide that help is a nice thing to be able to do here. So you were working in healthcare, and from talking to people, a lot of people in healthcare don't know a lot about ALS, especially when they're new, because it's a rare disease, and you always need education whatever you do. Did that background provide you an opportunity to educate others you're working with and give you some more empathy and ability to do that kind of work?
It certainly did. And, you know, we occasionally would see patients. You know, Lancaster County has just over 500,000 people. So statistically speaking, there will be about two diagnoses, you know, per year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're going to have a small subset of the population then that has the disease. And, you know, one of the things, you know, was certainly that the awareness was raised just because my parents' case was so rare and so odd because they were one of two couples living at the time of their diagnosis. And I think at that time, one of eight total that they could connect to both having the disease, but both having developed it after their marriage. Like it wasn't like they met at a support group and then got married. So that certainly helped raise the awareness. And, you know, our local media did a lot of stories about it, particularly from the community side. And it was interesting, right after I just won the election to be the majority whip, they came down to do a news story on me. And it turned out the photographer that came down was actually the same photographer that shot my parents' story. And he didn't know that when they set it up. Because as I was kind of sharing my background and why I'm so involved in the community, he literally interrupted the interview and said, he goes, I photographed your parents.
Wow.
He shared what his experience was too. So that was kind of, it's neat. I mean, that's one thing that's really neat about Lancaster County is, I mean, folks typically, you know, once they're there, they stay there. Mm-hmm. And in this case, you know, that was a story that he covered very early on in his career. And then he got to see it. You know, 20 plus years later, through our involvement in the community then as well.
Yeah, we've met some really amazing people from Lancaster, York, all that area of the state, and who have been in that area for a long time. And having those community connections makes such a big difference. So you won office in 2010, right?
It would have been, I have to stop and think, it was my third year of law school. So the election was in 2006. And then
that was close.
my end of law school, I literally won the primary, which was contested on Tuesday, graduated on Saturday. And so then I was unopposed in the general election. Mm-hmm. So I went ahead and studied for and took the bar exam in order to practice law. And then went into November, won the election unopposed, and then have been there since December of 2006.
Well, that's a lot of experience in Harrisburg. And actually, from meeting some people, like legislators who it's like their second term now, now that we're there a lot, and they say, oh, the second year, after being there a year, you really know what you're doing a lot more after that first year where you're just trying to get your feet wet and understand what's going on.
Yeah, it's a very busy you know, I kind of joke there's not a learning curve. It's more of like a vertical wall.
I bet.
Sometimes. So that's one of the reasons why, you know, when we first started the advocacy up there in terms of the line item in the budget, that's why I thought it was very important to kind of help personalize that and get you all to come up and, you know, share your personal stories as well as that of those of the patients in their local areas. Because, you know, we get a lot of requests through our office on any given day, or, you know, a lot of questions regarding any certain topics. And the extent that you can personalize it, I think it puts you light years ahead of any other inquiry that comes through the door.
Yeah, because that's one thing that people don't necessarily understand or appreciate sometimes about politics is that politicians are human beings. It doesn't matter if they're Republican, Democrat, Independent, whatever they are. Like, people are people.
Right.
And sometimes it's easy to get cynical and watch TV and say, oh, they're all, you know, they're not, none of them are good people or whatever. But in my experience going to Harrisburg, going to Washington, you know, they're generally mothers and fathers and, or, you know, sons and daughters who care about a lot of things. It's just different approaches sometimes.
Right. That's, for me, that's the one nice thing about this issue is it's one that typically transcends party lines.
Yeah, there's no pro-ALS group, thankfully.
Yes, that's for sure. But, you know, one of your early champions that helped me up there was Josh Shapiro, who's now county commissioner from Montgomery County. And, you know, he was in the majority, I was in the minority, and we were able to work through the Department of Health for the initial grant. And, you know, because of that, he and I have remained friends and in contact since then, even though he's since left the legislature. Because, as you know, when you have someone in your family or a close personal friend who has ALS, it is deeply personal and impacts you in a very direct way.
Yeah. When we go to Harrisburg now, a lot of times when we meet a representative, we'll say, oh, have you talked to Brian Cutler? And now with your new role in leadership, all of them have. But I mean, generally, they know your story now.
Right.
So when you got there, you were taking your story to ingratiate yourself and let people know what was important to you, I'm sure.
Right.
And did that help early on in your relationship building too?
Well, it did. I mean, I naturally, as my wife would point out, I naturally like to talk to people. I was the guy
that's good for politics.
Well, and I was the guy who, when we went to the beach, you know, I'd strike up conversations with the people to the right and the left of us, just because I'm always intrigued by, you know, what people do things. So I was a naturally chatty person anyway. Certainly helps in this line of work, but
it helps in podcasting too.
That's what I've been told. You know, so we, you know, as I shared, you know, the different pieces and the importance of it, you know, as I know you know, and I'm assuming most of the listeners know, but if they don't, I think this is an important fact that our veterans are twice as likely to have ALS. And one of the policy things that I noticed very quickly, it was that Pennsylvania as a commonwealth or as a state has the most deployed number of troops through the war on terror, which means that we really need to build the infrastructure to care for ALS patients, because they will all be coming home or already gotten home. Unfortunately, that's going to be something that can surface many, many years in the future. So I want to make sure, you know, in addition to caring for other patients with ALS, I think we also need to be ready to handle the influx that we expect from the high veterans population.
Yeah, and we're still trying to figure out why that is. My grandfather was a veteran who ended up with ALS. From World War II in Korea, and we had veterans who came to Harrisburg multiple times. Sadly, a few of them who've passed away, who made a big difference in Harrisburg. And our speaker at our press conference this year, Dale Miller, he's a veteran who fought all over the world, really, which is a really neat background. He was in, I think, Kosovo and Turkey at one point, and just incredible all the places he's gone. And then we have a lot of people who are veterans going to Washington, D.C., and they carry a powerful story. And I think they have a background, too, of wanting to continue to serve even if they're out of the military, which makes it easy to listen to them. So we know that your story made a difference. And so we want to make sure people know why they should continue being involved. So other people's stories make a big difference when they come to Harrisburg.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's probably the one takeaway that I've taken very early into my career, and it's played out again and again, even up until now, which is my fifth term. Anytime that you can personalize something, it helps. But more importantly, you know, as elected officials, we're expected to be able to vote on everything. Mm-hmm. And that's from, you know, I often joke, it's from agriculture the whole way over to like coal mining and zoology.
Let's go hand in hand, coal mining and zoology.
Yeah. So, you know, and the reason I bring that up is because, you know, I grew up in an ag community. I worked in the healthcare fields. So anything to do with like professional licensure, hospital licensing, you know, anything healthcare related or even ag related, you know, I can rely on my own personal past experiences, mm-hmm. you know, working on the dairy farm through high school or at the hospital later in life. But the problem is, you know, I need to be just as able to knowingly vote on a bill that deals with coal mining, which until I was elected, I'd never done anything more than burn coal, mm-hmm. you know, in our coal stove. That was it. So you have to understand mine safety and all these other things. So for folks who have not had that personal life experience yet with ALS, it's very important for patients to come and share their stories and talk about how this impacts your daily life in terms of mobility. And obviously, it's no secret, we have a structural deficit, structural budgetary problem at the state level. And when you're looking for ways to save money, I think one of the easiest and most cost-efficient ways is to keep patients in their homes longer, because one, it is less costly for the state to do that, but two, it's also better for the patient. You know, they're able to stay in an environment where they're comfortable, and you know, they can continue receiving a lot of that care at a cost that is significantly less than if you would have to move to a nursing home facility. So, you know, there are monetary reasons why I think the state should be interested in it. There are personal reasons, there are care-related reasons, and I think that when we as elected officials can hear those stories, I think it really helps to highlight those different pillars that kind of support that decision that we ultimately make.
And not only does it keep people with ALS in their home, but it also their family caregivers are able to continue working and staying at home. I remember with my grandmother with Parkinson's disease, we had to make her poor enough to get services because she had a dollar over, so she couldn't get
right.
You know, it was tough changing her whole lifestyle in order to maintain any sort of lifestyle.
Right, and that's really the difficult problem. The problem with a lot of government programs, and I understand why they've developed this way, but it's like a switch. It's either on or it's off. Mm-hmm. And if you're a dollar over, that's too bad. You're not there this year, or if you're a dollar under, you get access to full benefits.
How do I get rid of that dollar?
Right. And, you know, so we're looking at a variety of ways to better improve the delivery of those services, you know, stair-step access. And that goes across all programs, unfortunately. I understand that you have to draw the line somewhere for an administrative reason, but there's got to be a more fair way to do it, in my opinion.
Well, and hopefully once they see how things work here, then other states can kind of take those.
Right.
Because it always works nicely when a state can do something that other states can learn from each other. So now ALS, obviously personal to you, but it become personal to a lot of other people in Harrisburg because of meeting our patients. And I've heard from, like, Senator Vance has been the huge champion of us. And she met one of our patients who since passed away, Don Farrell. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I can drop his name just because he meant a lot in that. And she's asked about him. And other people have gone to patients' funerals sometimes or visited with them aside. We had someone who just went to someone's house recently. And that's not that unusual for them to come and visit sometimes. So do you ever hear those stories after the fact?
Yes.
Talking to people and they're like, oh, I just heard from Heather. I heard from so-and-so.
Yeah, inevitably. And folks, because they know my personal connection, right. I think that they follow back around and they'll mention that they met with either, you know, you or someone else from the society or a patient that had contacted them in their local district office. A couple of times they've also contacted me as essentially looking for resources, mm-hmm. Like you mentioned, where they kind of seek us out to try to figure out exactly how they can approach, helping care for that patient and get them in contact with the right folks. So those stories are abundantly important. I'm very, very grateful that individuals are willing to come up to Harrisburg and take their time to share that.
So that's great that the other the people work together, and sometimes you go and you tell your story in Harrisburg, and you're like, oh, well, I hope that went somewhere. But knowing that there's a conversation that happens the minute after you leave that office, and people are talking on the house floor, they're talking sometimes on social media or whatnot, and that conversation continues even after they've left that meeting.
Yep.
So what are ways that people can get involved? Like, how can people become effective advocates for this cause?
Well, one of the things that I always encourage patients to do is reach out to their local representatives and senators if they haven't done so already. And I do this for really any subject matter, not just ALS, but if you look at, you look at some of the diverse topics that we had to do. I always encourage people to kind of build a relationship with their local elected officials simply by calling and saying, hey, look, in this case, I'm an ALS patient. Mm-hmm. We're struggling, in order to stay at home. It's better for the state because, you'd spend excess of $80,000 a year if I was in a nursing facility, and kind of explain that. And if you ever have questions about how those bills might impact my life, feel free to call. Having that available, I was going to use the term Rolodex, but I've recently been told they don't sell those anymore in terms of contacts.
I'm sure you can get it on Amazon. You can get anything on Amazon.
Having that depth of individuals that you can call, I think, is invaluable.
Mm-hmm. And so does it matter if they meet in person? Does it matter if they come to Harrisburg or meet locally? Does it... what's most effective?
For me, and everybody's a little different. For me personally, I prefer to meet locally just mm-hmm. because you really drive home the local proximity of the impact. It's easy, and I recognize for the patients a lot of times it's more difficult to get to Harrisburg, which is why I'm so grateful for when some of them do make the journey mm-hmm. up. That is something that I think is important. At the end of the day, probably the best thing to do, Tony, would just have individuals meet wherever they're comfortable. Yeah. That's really it, because I think that they'll be more open and transparent with their own personal stories then.
I think that's a really important point, because I try and stress that people can do it wherever they are, but sometimes people see, oh, there's a big group in Harrisburg, I can't do that, and then can feel tuned out because it's hard to get there. But there's a lot of people can do it from locally at the local, because there's a local office always within just a few miles.
Correct.
Or they can even do it from home, whether someone comes to their home or they
send an email. Yep.
And we encourage people to take video sometimes, put stuff on YouTube and contact us, and people watch those things.
Yep.
And now a lot of the reps, I obviously you are very active on social media. So getting involved that way, does that make a difference?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, everybody's a little bit different in terms of what they like. I happen to like Twitter myself, although, with the new role, I don't have quite as much time to to dive into that world as I once did. Everything's a little personal that way, in terms of what they prefer to use. And, I think whatever, the Apostle Paul said, be all things to all people. And I think this is a great, opportunity to do that. So if you're comfortable on social media, do it that way. If you're comfortable in picking up the telephone and making a call, make a call, send an email, do a personal visit, whatever is inside your comfort zone, I'd encourage you to do. And quite frankly, if it's outside your comfort zone to contact anybody, I'd still encourage you to contact someone. Mm-hmm. I do think it's that important.
And really, no matter what your connection to ALS is, it makes a difference. So whether you're right. living with it, a caregiver, or just a friend, your personal perspective adds a lot, right?
Right.
So we have this line item in the budget, and the budget passes June 30th. So should people just be like, that's it, I'm done, don't have to do anything else again anymore? Or should advocacy continue all year round?
No,
that's a loaded question, because I know the answer.
Yeah, I'm a big proponent that you need to continue the advocacy year-round, just like you need to call your local official and build that relationship essentially before you ask for something, just offer to be a resource. I think that's helpful because it helps keep it at the forefront then. For whatever reason, all the disease-specific line items were zeroed out in the governor's budget. One of the that was a surprise for me, just given the size of the budget. I was surprised that anything got zeroed out. But that's something that is, you know, typically restored. So hopefully we can make progress on that, because there's a lot of disease-specific line items, you know, whether it's diabetes or sickle cell anemia or the ALS line item. You know, they're all very important to those different patient groups, and it's something that we need to keep working for.
And even though our primary focus of the budget is this line item, there's often other things that we can advocate for, whether it's expanding some sort of service or making sure people are aware of something, or even just asking a representative, can you put ALS in your email newsletter? Continue awareness. There's often things big and small that people can get involved with year round.
Right.
And including encouraging people to come to events like a walk. I know Representative David Millard's come to our Bloomsburg walk. He's coming again this year. Which is really cool, again, building that relationship.
Right.
A few have come to the other walks as well. So have you heard about events through any of them afterwards?
Sometimes, yeah. I know Representative Millard goes to a lot of, you know, he's involved locally, and he's been a wonderful supporter. And, yeah, you know, obviously, Senator Vance, I'm very close to her and always enjoy talking to her. So it's great to have her as an ally as well. But, you know, I'll hear from folks routinely about different different impacts or events or fundraisers that they've attended back home. And I just think it's great. And we got to keep that up.
And I'm sure likewise, if they have a personal cause like MS or diabetes or whatever, that then they share those experiences back with you. Because it's a conversation.
Right.
Again, people don't realize you're all human beings.
Try to be.
And one of the human beings that people don't necessarily give enough credit to is the staff in Harrisburg and locally. Everyone says, oh, I want to talk to the representative, or on a higher level, I want to talk to the congressman, and you have a lot of things you have to do, because it's actually a lot of work. But the staff make a big difference. I know we talk to your staff, Jen, all the time.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure people don't feel deflated about talking to staff, because it makes a big deal.
Yeah, Jen, she's been with me from the beginning. When I first was elected to office, and she's my administrative assistant, does a wonderful job. I'm very glad that I was able to keep her as I headed into the new leadership role. And you're right. She really was my right-hand person, helped you all set up events and things in terms of scheduling. And personally, she's always been very involved as well. You may not know this, but she was actually 2 years ahead of me in high school. And I'm friends with her younger brother. We graduated together. So she knew of my parents and things. And so, you know, she was part of that community very early on that was aware of my parents and things and our story. So, you know, so she has that personal connection as well. And, I've been blessed to hire additional staff. Since then, you know, Laura also works in the office, and John and Jordan. They're all getting engaged on the issue, which is wonderful.
And so if someone comes and meets with Jen, now granted your office knows about the disease very well anyway, but if someone goes to meet with Representative Smith's office, and I think there's a couple Smiths, and they meet with their staff person, that staff person still is able to go back and say, oh, there's all this information, and they become personally affected as well.
Right. Yeah, I kind of view that as an opportunity to make one more contact, because it's almost a twofer. You get the staff person and the representative or the senator at that point. So I think that's important.
All the relationships you can make a big difference. So we've been doing advocacy with you for over 5 years.
It's been a long time.
And like you said, Alan Phillips has known you since the 90s, and because Ellen's been working on this for 30 plus years. You've met a lot of people along the way through our events in Harrisburg and other things too. What impact has that made on you, seeing new people with this disease and just the continuation of it?
Well, that's one of the things that always does concern me. And I don't know if we're getting better at diagnosing it and treating it. Therefore you by default see more patients. Obviously I'd like to get to a point where there are no new patients. And then you can treat those who have it. But, you know, Ellen's been a wonderful friend for a very, very long time. And it's been neat to kind of go through my life at different points, at different places. And then we keep crossing paths, which is always, it's always a blessing for me. I think the world of her, and very appreciative of all the help she ever ever did. I can distinctly remember one of the very first times that I ever met her at a walk. She's just a wonderful, wonderful person.
Yeah, we're lucky at our chapter to have someone like Ellen. We wish every charity that does well could have an Ellen.
Yeah.
I'm sure she would like to hear that. So now a lot of people in Harrisburg, they've become aware because of the Ice Bucket Challenge. I remember last year, our chapter has three states, and all three of the governors and Tom Wolf had done the Ice Bucket Challenge. You obviously did. You challenged Governor Corbett, who did it, and he said that. So did that make a big difference later? Everyone's like, I know about this now.
Yeah, it certainly raised public awareness, which I think was good. And obviously it raised a lot of money, which was equally good. So I think it's good to keep it at the forefront of the conversation. It's probably going to be kind of hard to top the Ice Bucket Challenge. So I don't know what's next, but we probably should put our thinking caps on.
We have a few people working on thinking. and actually, I know that the people who started it, it was an organic thing, and they're working on making sure it remains an honest, organic project. They want to stay true to the cause, which is really great, those families. But one thing I know, I talked to Congressman Scott Perry last year. He had done the Ice Bucket Challenge, and he had not learned about ALS beforehand because he's new to Congress. It wasn't something he knew well about. And then so it provided an education talking point for a lot of these people. Do you think things like that create a launching point for education in Harrisburg as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's important anytime that you have the opportunity to kind of bring it into the conversation, whether it's through research, whether it's through services, or in this case, kind of a high profile fundraising type event. I think it's great because it helps generally to raise the awareness. Yeah.
So we're in May now. The budget passes theoretically the end of June.
We hope.
We hope as well. And then we want to do advocacy all year round. What would you recommend to people affected by ALS to do to get involved?
Well, in the short term, if they haven't already contacted their local representative and senator, I'd encourage them to do that. Mm-hmm. Mention the line item that was zeroed out in the governor's proposal. And then they could either write letters or emails, again, whatever they're comfortable with, and then hopefully encourage their representatives and senators to do the same. So I think that's important, and really just build those relationships because they'll pay dividends for years to come.
And like you said, not just ask the representative to support it, but encourage them to talk to other people to do it as well, and encourage them to use their relationships. So aside from what we're going to do in Harrisburg, are there any other things you're looking forward to in this fight against ALS, short term, long term?
Wow.
I'm sure we share the long term goal.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think the long term goal, I've kind of already hit it. On the short term, I feel a really pressing need to get the infrastructure in place for our vets who I know who are going to ultimately have a higher rate of occurrence. So to the extent that we can get the treatment and the facilities and the technology in place, I think the sooner that we can do that, the better, because we can help more people.
Yeah, and if they're in the South Central PA area where you are, make sure to get in touch with the people at the Hershey Medical Center, our certified clinic there. And to go back, did your family get in touch?
Yeah, I don't know if the clinic Hershey Clinic was fairly new then.
Right.
As a matter of fact, my mom, and I forget the gentleman's name, but he referred to it as Al's Club because he thought that sounded better than ALS. And he would always, when they went for the support meetings and different things, he would always joke about going to Al's Club. So I always got a good chuckle anytime I heard him refer to it as that.
Well, whatever keeps it in your comfort zone, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I think Sue Walsh, our head nurse there, she remembers your family,
yes,
too. And that's one of the things about our longevity here of people who are nurses, and we love to give nurses all the credit in the world for what they do. They still remember the patients many, many years later. Whether you were a state rep or not, they would have remembered the stories. So, well, we really appreciate not just your support, but the support of so many people in Harrisburg, and we encourage other people to continue being an advocate. How can they tweet you?
Well, you can go to my website at repcutler.com, or they can follow me on Twitter at @RepBrianCutler.
And obviously you can follow us at alsphiladelphia.org. If you want to join the Hershey Walk to Defeat ALS, which is at the campus of Hershey Medical Center, that's www.hersheywalktodefeatals.org. Sue Walsh, who cared for Brian's parents, she will be there and with her big Hershey Best Care Anywhere shirt. And Ellen Phillips, I think, will be there as well. So it'll be a great day. It's a beautiful campus. And continue being advocates. Contact me, Tony, at ALSPhiladelphia.org. And get involved at www.alsphiladelphia.org today and all year round with advocacy. So thanks, Brian, again, for your support.
Thanks for all you do, Tony.
Well, we look forward to continue work with you for the months and years to come.